Okay, this is another reading in our series on the laws of life. In fact, it's number 42, and it's our final reading on the divine laws of life. This is on the law of integration. I've shuffled the cards. The question is, as is always the case, what is the divine law of integration, and how can an aspirant best harness it? I've shuffled the cards. I've laid out a spread. It's on the screen for you to see. The starting point is the Five of Pentacles upside down. The counterpoint is the Knight of Pentacles right side up. The challenge is the Nine of Rods right side up. The purpose is the Ten of Rods right side up. The endowment is the Page of Pentacles upside down. The destiny is the Hierophant, number five in the Major Arcana upside down. Then we get to the real question, the pillar of revelation, and the real question. We have the real question is temperance upside down, number 14 in the Major Arcana, again a 5. We have the chariot, number 7 in the Major Arcana, upside down. We have in the position of spiritual ideal, we have the Page of Cups upside down. And then our culmination is the Ace of Swords right side up. So this is a very busy spread here. We have 5 upright cards and 5 reverse cards, which basically tosses that out. We have,
Is the Knight of Pentacles, which way did you say that?
The Knight of Pentacles is right side up.
Knight.
The second card is the Knight, as in Good Night America. Pentacles, right side up.
I have 4 and 6.
You got the wrong one.
You gave me the wrong spread? No.
Yeah, well, maybe you have one from last week.
No.
There's this.
Oh, I have 4 and 6.
Okay. Don't know anything about 4 and 6. Okay. Who joined us? Anne?
Mimi.
Yes, okay, hi.
Hi.
We're back. We're starting the spread here. And so the question is, what is the divine law of integration? And how can an aspirant best harness it? And the story begins, as it usually does, with the point, the starting point. And this is the Five of Pentacles. Five of Pentacles is a man and a woman on their path somewhere to Mecca or Ulaanbaatar or the capital of Tibet or something. I don't know. They're going somewhere. And they're treading on their wintry path, following the path of good Saint Wenceslas, good King Wenceslas. They probably live in the Arctic regions of the United States somewhere. And they're focused on the physical plane, the path that they're following, not understanding that every movement that they make is guided by this enormous cathedral window filled with music and archetypal patterns and whatnot above them. That is not a snowy ledge that you see there. It is a break in consciousness. There is a distinct difference in consciousness between that of the earth below the mean and that of life above the mean, the archetypal realm. But everything on earth, it exists within the context of above the mean. It has no purpose outside of that, whether there's any conscious recognition or not. Now, when you talk about the animal kingdom, dogs, cats, horses, elephants, butterflies, etc., there we go again. Did we lose everybody again? Are you all still with us? Anybody with us?
What the heck is going on?
I don't know. We're going to take a break here for a minute. Okay, we've had a brief time out while the electricity failed for us, but everything's back up and running now. We're still in the first card, and the first card is upside down. And as a result of this, we've had a consultation while everybody was out having a gimlet that there are 4 right side up cards and 6 upside down cards. But there you have it. the five manacles is upside down. I was explaining that this is a card in which these two wayfaring strangers are trying to follow a path somewhere, but they think the path is on the physical plane. They think their goal is to get to Mecca or Shambhala or the Mississippi or something or another. And it isn't. It is, of course, to find their way into the inner planes. But we live in a world composed of two distinct halves, the small half and the big half. The small half is life on the physical globe, almost meaningless. And the big half is the half above the mean, filled with meaning. Life in the physical plane is almost totally empty of meaning. There is a small amount, but only as we inject it. And that's where integration becomes so important. Now, I was just beginning to mention when the lights went out in Georgia that we have dogs, we have cats, we have horses, we have giraffes, whatever. And these are all entities that exist. They have physical forms, but they exist on the inner dimensions of life, just as we have physical forms that exist on the inner dimensions of life. There is a kind of integration. Ultimately, every time the cats or the dogs die, they return to their group soul and they're reunited, and then they start their career again. But they don't have a sense of, they don't have the capacity of the human soul to integrate with the personality and become one with it. And to influence life on Earth in that way. Now, the tricky part of this is that once upon a time, hundreds of thousands of years ago, neither did we. We were no more advanced than the dogs, the cats, maybe a little bit, but not appreciably. And as a gamble or a bet or a dare or something, the law of integration was instituted or revived from the law of Arcana. And human souls learn to control the personality up to a point. But it's still this separated kind of thing. And until the law of integration is fully worked out, the soul doesn't automatically control the personality. It's kind of a shot in the dark. It does the best it can and then lets the personality do what it wants, which is why you have idiots taking summer cruises through the Antarctica and getting stuck in the ice, because they have enough wisdom to prevent that, but they don't know how to access it. They're dumb. And, of course, it goes without saying they believe in global warming. But nonetheless, you see, there's often times when human beings do things on the physical plane that seem right and appropriate, including murder, rape, and all suicide and all kinds of terrible things. And the soul is up there going, above the being, pulling its hair out, literally saying, how can my personality be that dumb? But it's because it hasn't activated the law of integration. The law of integration is such that ultimately, the physical personality, the personality below the soul, below the being, learns to and allows itself to be incorporated by the higher self. And at that point, when there's a true integration, then the personality makes it its duty every day to express the creativity of the soul, the love of the soul, the wisdom of the soul, et cetera, et cetera. But until that point, it's pretty much on its own and there's no integration. So that's the goal of integration, is to integrate the visible and the invisible, the seen and the unseen, the abstract and the form world. And until that occurs, then the law of integration is not fulfilled. I hope this makes some sense. So this is what the Five of Pentacles is all about. We go on our crusades, but we interpret everything in terms of the physical plane, not understanding that there's no goal in the physical plane that is worth achieving. The goal is to achieve full unification with the soul, which is what we'll spend this whole year talking about with the Light of the Soul class. However, in in this context, we have to realize that there are a whole bunch of different levels of integration. You can integrate yourself with your job or your city or your family. You can be one of the boys. That's a form of integration. You can integrate yourself with your state, be an effective leader. But that's the most superficial level of integration. There's no genuine integration with the life above the mean when that occurs. You can integrate yourself with divine energies. If you're a musician, you can play Bach or Beethoven or whoever it might be with sublime inspiration. And you're integrated with the creative spirit of the angels that inspired the composer in the first place. You can do those things. But it's still not, it's a step in the right direction, but it's still, once you pack away your Stradivarius and you walk out of the music hall, you may still be the consummate idiot that you were before. I was going to use a different word, but I thought I'd clean it up for this. Then there's, you can integrate with divine designs where you're working with the conscious design of a plan of God. You still may not, you may be responsive to it, and you're closer to it, but you're still not fully integrated. And then the final stage, you become integrated with the soul. Now, the difference between being integrated with your family, for example, or your city, and being integrated with the soul is the difference between night and day. Being integrated with the soul is our goal here. This is what the law of integration in full operation. We are designed to, God has designed life so that life can grow up on the physical plane and say, aha, I recognize that there's life above the mean. And then we work to integrate ourselves with that and express it and express the love and the harmony and all that good stuff that we find above the mean, but in our daily life. If we can do that, then we've achieved something worthwhile, and we've confirmed this law of integration. Now, as I indicated, hundreds of thousands of years ago, that was not the case for the human family. Humanity was destined to learn all the stuff the hard way, the slow way, the long, slow slog, as it were. But that would have meant that none of us would have achieved adepthood by now. And it would have cheapened things a lot. So things were pulled, somebody called in a favor or two, and it was allowed that humanity would individualize, meaning we would have one soul, and the personality would try to integrate with the soul. And so far it's happened for quite a few people. There's still billions and billions to go, and so from that perspective, we're still in the childhood of humanity. And we still have problems with ancient mariners getting stranded in the Antarctic, which is just an indication of ooh-ha-ha-ha-ha. But anyway, we start with this Five of Pentacles. We're on a mission to get somewhere, but we don't know where. That somewhere is above the mean, so we have to develop our mind to work with that level of refinement. Our counterpoint then is the Knight of Pentacles. And notice this. This is a very interesting card. This is a one of several pentacles here. The Knight of Pentacles is somebody who's learned how to get around on the physical plane. But the notable thing about the Knight of Pentacles is, where's his horse? The horse is missing. There's this guy with his suit of armor and his beard. He must be a part of Duck Dynasty. Mm-hmm. But he's got no horse. He's riding his horse, but you don't see it. A little tuft of hair there. Well, we assume it's the horse. He's ready for battle, but he has no battle to fight. Well, the interesting thing here is that none of the events of the physical plane, none of the wars of humanity, none of the diseases, none of the plagues, not even cold weather, is all that important to us. It's part of daily life. We have to deal with it. We have to cope with that because we have a physical body. And as long as we're alive in the physical form, we have to pay attention to it. But it's just not that important. Neither is healthcare. Very little of life in the physical plane is important compared to the divine energies that we could be united with. Nonetheless, we're meant to move from Page of Pentacles to Knight of Pentacles to learn the lessons. We haven't gotten to Page of Pentacles yet. We'll talk about it when we get there. The physical plane gives us all kinds of lessons to learn. Physical plane is like a textbook on the level of our maturity, not the nature of our character, because everybody's real self is pure and sublime and filled with joy and love and all this sort of stuff because it's made of God. But down here on Earth, the soul doesn't necessarily have that good a control over it, and so the criminal nature of some people, the selfishness, etc., can come out. But we're meant to create a mature character. That's what is embodied in the Knight of Pentacles. The Knight of Pentacles is an individual who is able to ride that horse. Ride it so well, you don't even realize he has a horse. He's that good. And that's pretty good. Okay, we then go on to the challenge, which is, the Nine of Rods. We have to remember that the Nine of Rods is pretty good stuff here. That's the 9 out of 10. It's the 9th lesson. All those rods are archetypal patterns, which are about as low an aspect of divinity as you're going to run into. They are the designs which govern everything we find on Earth. They are not the things of Earth themselves, but they're the essence of joy, the essence of harmony, the essence of humility, the essence of gracefulness, the essence of light, the essence of love, the essence of patience, the essence of order. And we have to learn to deal with those and interact with them and let those be the motivating forces of everything we do on Earth. And then Earth becomes pretty easy to navigate. Yeah, there's still problems. But we recognize we can learn from problems. We can build our maturity. The Nine of Rods is somebody that is kind of halfway between heaven and earth, halfway between above the mean and below the mean. He sees and recognizes the archetypes. He's kind of nonplussed about the whole thing. He's detached. He's an observer. He doesn't take life on the physical plane all that seriously because he knows that the ultimate reason for light on Earth is to manifest the divine light. So there'll be ups and downs, there'll be ins and outs, but basically he'll bet on the home team. That's every time. That's life above the mean. So there you have it. Then we come down to the 10 of Rods, which is our purpose. It's interesting that the 9 of Rods, which is fairly advanced mentally, is the challenge, but then our purpose is the 10 of Rods, which is the 10th lesson of working with the mind. So the 9th and 10th lesson of working with the mind is pretty powerful stuff here. And the 10 of Rods is a fellow, we don't see his head, he's totally impersonal, but he's gathering together his sheaf of rods, the 9 rods, the 10 rods, or whatever, all those mental energies, and he's focusing it down to a single point. Because he's learned that if you do that, you can transform the meaning of things on Earth by injecting spiritual force into it. So here he's come, and this is his purpose, he's come to realize what the Ace of Swords portends up in the final position. As we work with the law of integration, what we're really doing is working to transform life on Earth to create a heaven, a Garden of Eden here on Earth. And we're not quite ready for that because we're still in the infant stages of humanity. But we're learning that way, and we're developing the mind. The mind, between the 9 and the 10 of Rods, the mind is the key to unlocking this enormous connection between heaven and earth, the connection we find in the 5 of Pentacles. Then, so we go on then to the endowment. We have the Page of Pentacles. Page of Pentacles is a kind of wild and woolly fellow. He's got that fairly chaotic cap on that is just full of energy, bursting with all kinds of ideas, and they come swirling down in, and he gets carried away with his emotions. So he has a lot of great ideas, but he doesn't have very good control over them. And he's very enthusiastic and gung-ho. Let's go do this now. All right. So he's not using the energies of Earth that he's interacting with very effectively. All right. But nonetheless, that's where we are. The human family is basically astral, still stuck in the physical plane. We are we're beguiled by the physical plane. And so we need to go on then and see that the destiny of working with this law of integration lies in the Hierophant. And that is the Hierophant is the keeper of the mysteries. As we understand the law of integration and how it affects humanity, we unlock. You notice those keys down there in the foreground. We unlock the secrets of all the mysteries of human life, including many that are not at all obvious from working on the physical plane. So the law of integration and learning to understand this teaches us the nature of consciousness, its control of the physical plane, the laws of life to sustain it, and the mysteries of divine life. Okay, I'm going to pause here and entertain any comments or questions that you might have so far before we go on to the pillar of revelation. Any comments or questions so far? Anybody? Well, let's go on then. We've got the pillar of revelation, which is the main course here. And before we do that, I want to point out something. We have two pages in the spread, both of them upside down. We have the Page of Pentacles and we have the Page of Cups. In both cases, their heads, the caps that they're wearing, indicates that their mental energy is fairly chaotic. It's undisciplined. They're full of enthusiasm, but they don't know which way to turn. And in fact, things are fairly fishy when it gets to the Page of Cups, because he's more interested in the fish coming out of the cup than he is trying to organize his thoughts. He has no inclination at all that there are those two perfect flowers behind him, which are the true motivating forces. He doesn't understand what motivates him. He doesn't understand how the law of integration has made it just a matter of time before he becomes the Hierophant and is unable to unlock the mysteries of life. He doesn't understand any of this thing. He doesn't interact with the plane of motives. He's completely distracted by the glamour of the fish. And so this is one of the problems that we have. Somebody, I think, is typing. If you're going to type, I'd appreciate it if you'd, whether it's this click, click, click. Somebody might be clicking something if not typing. It's coming through. I will mute as a result.
It might be interference on the line. Yeah.
Could be interference. It's gone now. All right, so we have to keep in mind that we don't want to be distracted by glamours. There are all kinds of glamours about integration, and to a degree we let these things go to our head too much, and we get our head filled with all kinds of ambitious things of how we would do things better than God can do it, and that's just a false line of approach. All right, pillar of revelation. The real question is temperance. And temperance is an angelic form, kind of cramped in this rectangle here. But so her wings are clipped they aren't really wings, they're just massive energy things. And the way that the temperance works is it takes a divine energy and focuses it through the angelic expression, which purifies it, purifies the structure through which it's being focused, but also then sets it down so that it can be used. So an angel of music sings to musicians who then base their wonderful compositions on the music that they hear. And that's the way this works. So this becomes a lesson to us. In any particular instance in the physical plane, we can ask ourselves, how can we be a conduit for the energies of the spirit? What do we have to temper? How do we have to regulate it? What do we integrate? What does it mean to, for example, if you have somebody that needs healing, it's pretty obvious that what you do is you go out and you find a source of healing on the inner planes, and then you serve as a conduit, bringing that energy into the earth plane to heal these people. And the same thing for many other things, but there are other more subtle things. How do you become a peacemaker? How do you express the nobility of the human design? How do you express integrity, et cetera, et cetera? These are genuine conundrums that tax our skill and ability in the use of law of integration. But this is what we're dealing here in the Pillar of Revelation with the process of transformation. How do you take something which is ordinary and transform it into something extraordinary? And this is important to us now because, as I mentioned a few weeks ago in one of my above the means or whatever, this is a time for doing something exceptional. Do something exceptional. Go out of your way. Do something really great and transformative. But that's what I mean by exceptional. I don't mean just something that just invent a better mousetrap. Invent a whole new classification. Something that will genuinely transform life. So here we are. We're at the bottom of the Pillar of Revelation. We're trying to figure out what it means to transform life and activate the law of integration in this way. And the question that's being posed to us is, in this area of our life, how do we serve as a conduit for the love and the wisdom and the joy of spirit to transform this quality of life, to make this exceptional? You see, we go on to the unseen force and we have the chariot. Now, potentially, this is a great deal of force because the chariot has all kinds of energy. But right now, it's pretty much flatlined. He just goes around and around in the same old circle and doesn't accomplish very much. And yet the power is there. The potential is there. And so how do we unwind that so that we get that as a motivation? That'll come up in the next card, the spiritual idea, where we have the Page of Cups. He doesn't even know about the motivation. But let's keep in mind the motivation for this transformation is something that is tapped by the spirit of temperance, tapped by the angelic force to move this along, to motivate humanity to do a better job, to become a clearer thinker, whatever it might be. And you run immediately into opposition in the chariot. And you don't want this to become earthbound at this point, or you'll just stimulate the problem rather than resolve it. So you have to look at, well, what will get this going again? Notice in the chariot, there's a happy face and a sad face. The energies, I think we've just lost you again. Anybody there with us still?
Well, you know what? Just keep going and finish.
Well. Once again, we lost electricity. We've had a little interruption here. We were talking about temperance, chariot, and the Page of Cups. And the idea here is through temperance, we harness the motivation. And this is a way in which we can always apply the law of integration as humble aspirants. We don't have to wait around for God to decree something on the law of integration. We can harness the law of integration by, even though we're down here on the path to Mecca of the Five of Pentacles, we can tap the motivation of whatever we're doing and use that as a transformative power. Make sure that the motivation is something of the life of spirit, joy, wisdom, love, light, whatever it might be, and use that to get the chariot moving again outside of its ordinary circle and to activate the flow of energy through the Page of Cups. Even though the Page of Cups is completely unaware of the flowers of motivation behind them and totally preoccupied by the fish. Now, when we do that, then we are able to accomplish, we're able to use this law very effectively for our benefit. This then brings us to the culmination, the Ace of Swords. The Ace of Swords would normally be interpreted in terms of productivity, and in terms of productivity, it's a, that's one way to interpret it here. But in terms of this reading, it's also the whole process of transformation that we talked about back with the Ten of Rods. And again, that's the end point of our motivation. We reach up into the higher dimensions of life and we touch beauty, order, patience, whatever, peace, joy, light, love. We tap these things and then we distill them and work them out through our character so that we can express them but always in a transformative way. We're not just taking beauty and expressing its beauty. We're not just taking creativity and expressing its creativity. This is always transformative. We create flowers that grow out of this. Notice that the sword, the Ace of Swords representing spirit, this Ace of Swords is plunged into the ground between patterns of ancient evil, these patterns, this residue of ancient evil. So it's definitely a sort of transformation. We take older patterns of human consciousness and we transform them into something healthier that we then becomes the fruit of our transformation. Okay, I'm going to stop there, entertain comments and questions.
I think that's a problem with the line.
Yeah.
Telephone.
Good work. We have some kind of a clicking problem here, but if anybody has any comments or questions, now's the time to ask.
Carl.
Yes.
Does the soul, is the soul learning to work with the personality as the personality is learning to work with the soul?
Well, yes. I'm not quite sure I understand your question.
You had said that something about, the soul being surprised or thinking, oh, gosh, I don't have full control of my personality.
That's usually the case until somebody is consciously working on the spiritual path. The vast majority of people who actually have expressed some preliminary interest in serving the soul have no insight into that at all. They continue with subsequent lives, and they may have a life filled with adoration of God, serving as a nun or a monk. They may have a life in which they're agnostic or atheistic even. It doesn't really matter because, of course, what happens on the physical plane stays on the physical plane. There's no value to it whatsoever, or very little, except that it serves as a guide to developing character. I'm going to mute this for a moment because there's this incessant clicking. I hope nobody else can hear it. That's good. That's gone. But the soul is, and originally the soul was intended to do the same thing, but the soul would have virtually no control over the personality at all. And the personality could go completely haywire and do horrible criminal things without any capacity of the soul to interfere. The only capacity the soul has to interrupt that kind of activity today is that the soul can step in and terminate the lifetime. Let's say a person with some potential ends up being a drug addict. The soul can be so offended by this bizarre turn of events that he steps in and actually ends the lifetime. Because it wasn't the purpose of that lifetime to become a drug addict, it was to serve some useful purpose. And so that's about the only way the soul can control. Now, as one passes the third initiation and on beyond that, the soul has constant control. It's kind of like the soul is sitting on the individual's shoulder most of the time, and it's a genuine companionship. And then the soul has a direct and dynamic input on the life of the personality. Okay, does that make sense? Dorothy, does that make sense?
Yes, that's helpful.
Okay.
That's good. Helpful. Thank you.
Good. Anybody else? Well, that's it for this reading. I'm going to put this out of its misery. Or out of my misery, because we've had so, yes.
I just wanted to ask you one question here. I remember it was a long time ago, you making the comment that our true work is the transformation of energy. And I had written that down and stuck it in my car, and I just, you know, I keep that in front of me and will come across that note from time to time. When you were talking about doing something transformative, you know, something exceptional. Those kinds of things don't necessarily have to be huge, transforming humanity in general, but they can be transformative things that we do on a daily basis. I'm thinking this, and I'm just wanting you to verify this, in terms of our response to someone, instead of responding in the same old way, you do something, you just still, or you know, you use that temperance in the way you might respond to someone, and do it bringing spirit through to touch them. Correct? I mean, it can be very subtle. It can be in ordinary things of life as well. That's what I'm thinking. Just help me with that.
Well, that's absolutely true. The thing is that when somebody is able to work with that transformative level of character, they're doing it constantly. So it's not just once in a blue moon. It's not once every 2 years you do something outstanding and that's enough. It's an almost constant kind of thing. Once you can do it once, you can do it just about all the time. You treat people fairly and with integrity and honesty. You don't just reserve it for the special dinnerware.
Right.
And so it's important to understand this. It's the character that's transformed. It's not our behavior. Behavior is relatively unimportant. It's character that counts. And obviously, if you have character, you're always going to be heroic. Even if the circumstances don't demand heroism, you'll always be heroic. You'll always be slightly larger than life. You'll always be kind and gentle and understanding. It's like tonight on one of the news shows, people were talking about the gracious way in which Mitt Romney handled this recent insult that he had regarding a biracial grandchild. And he handled it in a way that everybody would expect, and which was gracious. And he graciously accepted the apology and went on to say how important this child was and how much the, part of the fabric of the family he was. And that's not something that would be unusual. That's his character. And it's something that that people should understand and recognize, that they had a chance to elect somebody of real character and they didn't. So what does that mean? Does that mean that he lacked the wherewithal to be president? No, not at all. It meant that the electorate lacked the discernment to see a person of real character. And yet here, a year later, there's an opportunity, almost casual, almost incidental, where he had the opportunity to show this, and he showed it in the most natural human way possible. So that was not something that was a one-off kind of basis for him. That was a constant, ongoing kind of thing. And that's what we have to understand here on Earth, is that character is not something that you turn on and turn off. It's always on.
Right. Well, that's what I was just, yes, wanted to verify, because I mean, we probably do things like this without even realizing. I mean, if we're thinking about it, we're not quite there, integrated yet, but that's probably the way that, you know, the first steps to getting there. But I agree with you, because at that moment, watching that interview, it was as if he was teaching humanity how to be. I agree with that. It was amazing.
Okay. Well, this is part of the nature of the law of integration. These qualities only become integrated in our consciousness when they become the most perfectly natural and normal things for us to do. Good. Anybody else? Any other comments or questions? Well, that's it for this reading. This is the end of The Laws of Life, so I want to thank you all for participating. And it's unfortunate that we had a few interruptions, but we overcame them. And I think we integrated this message effectively. So thank you, and Godspeed to all of you.